It's a privilege to be able to talk to you a little bit about our overseas work, where we are acquainted with it. I find that each time I come home, the first time we are to speak to a church group or something like that, it seems to be hard to shift gears and know just what to say on an occasion like that. And this time, it has been especially so because of the way things have been going in the past 3 years in Ethiopia. I came across a letter that I have kept. It is a letter that would have been unthinkable, two or 3 years ago, probably. The fact that it was written indicates the way things move in these days. To Mr. Thompson, we 11th grade girls want to take driving lessons. Therefore, please talk it over with the staff and tell us. We want to take the advantage of learning while we have the chance. We're very serious about it. We don't want any underlying discrimination anymore on the part of the male population. And we are not joking. Hoping to get positive answer. It's really not as militant when you know the 11th grade girls. It's not as militant as it sounds. But my immediate reaction was, well, why not? And the director said, yes, if you can fit it into the schedule, go ahead. And there began one of the most interesting experiences that I can remember. I had my doubts. I was pretty sure when I had a chance to talk with them that they would change their mind, because I pointed out that we didn't just have driving. Driving Land Rovers over there, of course, is a prestige sort of thing, and I thought perhaps that's all it was. These girls range from peasant types, there were only eight of them in the class, peasant types, to a couple that would be considered well-to-do, and who will probably, we are afraid, become targets in this revolution. I told them that we had to learn maintenance. We'd have to get our hands dirty, and I thought that would discourage some. Oh yes, they figured that would be so. And I pointed out also it's an agricultural community, and we don't have a whole lot of cars to be driven and to practice with, and so it's probably reasonable to expect that you would mostly be practicing on tractors. I thought that would certainly probably take most of them out. Oh yes, they understood that, no problem. And so we had nothing to do except to get started. And I was expecting, told them I would wait and see how they could work out their schedules and so on, and I would hear from them. With a little bit of disappointment, I didn't hear from them for some days. But then one day somebody came out from the class and said, aren't you going to do anything about this driver's class? They were simply waiting for me to get going. Every place where I had a doubt, they proved me wrong. I thought when it comes to changing the tire on the Land Rover, taking the wheel off, you know, and getting into the mud and so on, getting under and jacking it up, well, that's the time. And then I saw that very attractive young lady, one of the leaders in the school, lying on her stomach in the grass under the car, operating the jack. No problem, as if they had done it all of their lives and as if it was quite normal for Ethiopian women to be working on vehicles. It turned out to be one of the most unusual and the most pleasant little projects that I have had in the work at the secondary school. And I think of Dembidolo as the place where I spent the best years of our time overseas. We had about 12 years of actual work there. We helped to set up the school and were with it for the rest of those years. But 7 weeks ago, when I came out of there on just about the last of the Ethiopian Airlines flights, my feeling was one of great relief for myself and some concern for the people that were still left. The situation at the station was tense and was getting worse, particularly at the hospital. And shortly after I got home, Harold Kurtz was pulled out of New Wilmington Missionary Conference and sent back to Ethiopia to negotiate with the powers of the community about getting people out, the remainder of our people. At first, they were able to get women and children out, and it was with great relief I heard that Bill Dieter, our builder, was out, and only the doctor was left. And we'll have more to say about that situation a bit later. It was on our way through Addis Ababa for furlough and leave of absence that we began to see the grim side of the revolution. The radio and TV were putting out lists. One list was names of people who had been arrested and were then in detention. The other list was the name of people still at large, and they were asking that the people of the communities help to hunt down these people and turn them in. When they got all of these people together, it was very much like a who's who of Ethiopia. It seemed that almost every prominent official from the former regime was included. And then, after a very short time, there came that event that shocked a good bit of the world, and I think especially Africa, when they executed 60 of those people. We went on to the States and were here for 2 years then, and we tried to follow what was going on. There was land reform. The landlords were dispossessed. The land was redistributed. The tractors were taken away from the prosperous farmers for distribution to the new cooperative farms. Urban reform had been instituted. Excess houses were taken away from people. If they wanted a house and wanted to keep it, they had to move into it. The other houses were taken away. We had agreed to return to Dembidolo after a leave of absence if it was felt that we were needed there. And so in April of 76, going ahead of the rest of the family, I was on my way back to Ethiopia. At the time, I was deep in a book, The Gulag Archipelago, by the Russian author Solzhenitsyn. And by this time, the communist nature of that revolution in Ethiopia was pretty obvious, and it helped to make that book that I was reading much more meaningful and also more depressing. It was astonishing when I got back the quantity and the intensity of the revolutionary rhetoric that was being put out. There's that repetition, constant repetition of the slogans and the catchphrases. And any literate Ethiopian is totally without excuse if he doesn't know by now that the three main enemies of the masses are feudalism, bureaucratic capitalism, and imperialism. In any issue of the newspaper, you will have this reinforced. We had been gone less than 2 years when we got back to Addis Ababa, but it was obvious that things had happened at a rapid rate. Assassinations were being carried on with terrible frequency. It would be both ways, against government people and against the opposition groups. There was shooting for a long time. There was shooting every day and every night. At one point we were warned, don't drive downtown by yourself. You needed a passenger, someone who could keep an eye on the crowds along the sidewalk to see, make sure whether anyone was shouting at you or waving at you to stop, because people were being killed when drivers didn't recognize someone. They were not in uniform, ordinarily, the people that were doing the stopping. Drivers didn't realize that they should stop. The shots in the night and the tension that came from that and the conversation about the killing was very hard on some of the children, both mission children and Ethiopians. And of course, in most cases, it's tougher for the Ethiopians because they didn't have the freedom of movement, the freedom to change their situation that we did. One of our families were at the airport preparing to leave, and the young boy in the family was so tense that he simply fainted. He had a terrible fear that at the last moment they would be prevented from leaving. When I got back out to the west, to Dembidolo, where we worked, I was struck again by the change that had taken place in 2 years. I noticed that many men were wearing a little military-type cap, some with one color of trim and some with another. And there seemed to be organized groups that I hadn't known about before. There were district organizations, and there were farmers' associations. And I began to hear about people being taken before a kangaroo court. It turned out that the farmers' associations were authorized to dispense justice. They, in many cases, well, in general, they replaced the old system of the judges that we had had in that area before. They could arrest people, they could call witnesses, hear cases, decide on discipline, give punishment or recommend what the punishment or sentence should be. And you soon became aware at Dembidolo that they were organized, or they were getting organized, to keep track of things, to keep track of just about everything. You might notice a man sitting on some high place on the mission compound, simply watching the compound. You might come back 3 hours later and find him still watching the compound. I was on my way by motorcycle over to the secondary school, only about a mile and a half. We travel that road all of the time. It was about just before dark, and suddenly a man stepped out from behind a tree with a rifle. Simply stood there, watching me intently as I went by. I think perhaps the best thing in cases like that is just to smile and wave nonchalantly as you go by. But I didn't feel very nonchalant. And about that same time, Joanne Griffith, a teacher at the school, was going by Land Rover over to the school, and a rather motley group of men tried to stop her. She knew of no reason why people should be stopping her on the road, and she didn't stop. And it happened again, and she didn't stop. But then she got to the gate to the school compound, and I suppose that group number two had cut across the corner. Anyway, they caught up with the car and began to beat on it with sticks. If you know how a Land Rover is made, you can imagine what it must be like inside when people are beating on it with sticks. Joanne scrambled out and ran down to the director's house. But it turns out, no real problem. The security patrols from the local villages are getting in gear, and apparently they simply want to make the point that when they say stop, they mean stop. Most of the women in the countryside have a pretty rough life, and it is typified for me by the picture of a woman slowly plodding up a steep hillside with a great jar of water tied to her back. One of our teachers, Marion Farquhar, was once a farm girl, and she tackled one of those water pots once, and she found she could do nothing whatever with it. That's still very typical. Their lot is hard. But along with that, you see something else. You see a group of peasant women striding purposefully down the road. You notice that they wear those little caps that have a certain color of trim. They are carrying a little stick about the thickness of a broomstick and about this long. And they are businesslike. These are peasant women. Now, some of the men, I think, were hardly ready for a change so sudden and so drastic. These women have their official meetings at which they are indoctrinated, and they are reminded how they have been oppressed by the government and by an unjust society, and in particular by men. And Bukala is one of our local workers, electrician. He made some sarcastic remark. I assume it was sarcastic. Anyway, it stirred somebody up. He made a remark to his wife about this new authority that women were given. And for that, Bekele spent a night in jail. Now, some of us, knowing Bekele, suspect that he just might have had it coming. In order to consolidate their position and power, leaders of a communist revolution resort to certain things, some of them predictable. It's better, for example, for your image, if your own Ministry of Information and your own press puts out the news. Western correspondents have a way of injecting their own ideas of what the situation is into their news releases. And so Western correspondents had to go. And you need to control the media. And so RVOG, powerful radio station, Radio Voice of the Gospel, was nationalized and immediately put to use in the service of the overseas propaganda barrage. The U.S. government was raising questions about human rights and cutting back aid. And the Ethiopian government decided to reduce the American presence without delay. And the United States Information Service, Military Assistance Group, the Naval Medical Research Unit, Communications Center at CAGNU, the consulate at Asmara, were given 4 days to pack up and get out of the country. One important premise for communists, and a very popular one with some of the younger generation, is that authority proceeds from the barrel of a gun. And so it's not surprising that the local authority called the guns in. It's helpful to have those guns for those local security patrols that they are organizing, and also to begin to arm the peasants to protect themselves against their enemies. And such a government, of course, always has to do something about missionaries. And perhaps the expulsion of missionaries from the Sudan in the early 60s made a point that it doesn't enhance your image particularly to just kick them out wholesale. And so this time they didn't do that. Our mission secretary warned us that the order had gone out to the provinces for harassment of missionaries, starting with Americans. For some reason or another, it seemed that the Swedes were second on the list. We don't know why. There's some argument about whether there was ever a written notice sent out, but there's no question about the harassment. Our mission was fortunate. I should make that clear. Compared with what other missions and people of other areas went through, our experiences were rather mild. But it went somewhat like this. Well, it did go like this at Dembe Dole. All workers had to be unionized. That is, the hospital workers, maintenance workers, building crew. And the first thing that they demanded was that all work contracts should be renegotiated in detail, even though those contracts had been drawn up in accordance with the Ethiopian Labor Code. Then there were demands and accusations. And it wasn't that you could speak to them if you wished. You had to speak to them. When you were accused and the problems were brought up, you had a set aside time for meetings, and those meetings went on and on. So that some people found that they were spending more time in meeting than almost anything else. Atomosisa, the Christian administrator at the hospital, had some of his training in the States, and that perhaps was one reason that he became a target as soon as he got back to Ethiopia. The workers made demands that they be given loans, that the retirement fund be brought out from Addis Ababa and placed at their disposal so that they could draw on it, and so on. Discipline went out the window, and a dresser in the hospital did not have to do what the doctor said or what the nurse said or what anybody else said. Came to the place where Dr. Knowles, who was left in charge, a Britisher, who was out there under the Scottish Presbyterian Church, finally said, the situation is intolerable. We're just simply going to grind to a halt. And either I have to have authority to dismiss these three troublemakers, or else I will have to leave. Well, Otto Mosisa was getting so much pressure that he submitted his resignation. The doctor agreed he would take over as administrator of the hospital and make the decisions. The chief of police came over and he told Otto Mosisa, the administrator, you cannot resign. It's not possible. And the hospital workers announced that they would not accept the doctor as administrator. One night, Otto Mosisa was taken from his home, and he is, as far as we know, still in prison. One of the many charges against him is that he is a counter-revolutionary. We hope that they are not seriously pushing that, because that would be in the nature, possibly in the nature of a capital offense. Dr. Knowles was restricted to the area, not allowed to leave. It was at that point that Harold Kurtz was taken from the conference in New Wilmington and sent back to Ethiopia. Now, we understand, Dr. Knowles is free to go as soon as the government can get a doctor to replace him, and as soon as he can get transport. There have recently been no Ethiopian airline flights in. There have been no charters. It's rainy season and the roads are closed, and there wouldn't be gasoline enough if the roads were not closed. They were hoping, the last we heard, that a smallpox eradication helicopter would be able to drop in and take the doctor out. Anne and Niles Reimer, as far as we know, are probably now in Addis Ababa. They had hoped to stay down along the Barrow River as long as possible. Things down there were peaceful. One of the problems, I believe, is that our people are misled by those peaceful situations, and sometimes wait too long in getting out. Whether Anne and Niles will go back in again, I don't know. But I think almost all of us hope that they are not allowed to do it. It isn't easy to neatly summarize the Ethiopian situation or to predict what's likely to happen. You're talking about a country of between 24 and 27 million people who are not only engaged in a communist-type revolution, but are fighting a war on two fronts. In the southeast, they are fighting with the Somalis, who have been equipped and helped by the Russians. The Russians are now equipping and helping the Ethiopians. And it looks as if perhaps they are intending that Ethiopia shall win. But in the meantime, you can imagine what is happening to young people. They created a militia of, I'm not sure the exact number, the smallest number I've heard is 100,000. They recruited a militia a short time ago. They got minimum training, and then we understand were sent to the fighting areas. And there is now a draft going into effect that evidently has the young people thoroughly worried. As regards Dembidolo itself, we're still concerned about Dr. Knowles and about Atomosisa. We've been thankful that violence and bloodshed, such as there has been some places, has not come there. We had three students brought to the hospital and admitted after they were investigated, students of the government secondary school. The local authority for such matters came into the school, investigated, found 26 students guilty of opposition to the government. In the discipline that followed, discipline and punishment, three students had to be admitted to our hospital, and the Catholic clinic took care of a fourth. And that has been about the most violence we have had, which compared with some areas is quite good. I have never been more thankful for a staff than the one that we were a part of at Dembidolo in Bethel Evangelical Secondary School this past year. It seemed almost incredible that we could come through the year, a complete school year, without real serious trouble. And yet, that is what happened. You people, as United Presbyterians, are involved in the lives of many people far away through places like the school at which we work and other institutions in Ethiopia. And if the curtain gets drawn tightly around Ethiopia, as some people expect, then you may tend to feel that there it goes. All of our investment, all that we have given in the way of money, concern, and people, there it goes, down the drain. And I want to direct your attention to a few people. Bill Dieter was returning from his building project out in the boondocks, and in the middle of the night he had to stop at a small village. You are checked at some of those places, and you don't just freely ride across the countryside. When he stopped, out of the darkness came a tall young man with a gun across his shoulder, and it was Daniel. Daniel means different things to different people. He was my student. He's a one-eyed fellow, lost an eye in an accident. He was my student in shop class, I suppose the sharpest student I ever had. He worked for Mr. Dieter, the builder. Mr. Dieter said he never met another Ethiopian that could match him for understanding instructions, reading a drawing, getting the idea the first time. Daniel is a radical, and we have had some interesting times on this issue of radical and what is the significance. But Daniel is a radical mainly because he is deeply concerned about his people who live in such poverty as you folks here cannot imagine, and he is convinced that this radical approach is what it's going to take for life to become more tolerable for his people. But I find it interesting to think about Bill Dieter, very conservative, practical builder from Southern California. Stopped out here in the middle of nowhere by Daniel, a radical young man of college student age. But they met and they talked that night as friends. And that happens so much that these people that you come almost automatically to think of in terms of adversary or even enemy, those people with whom you have had contact in the past respond when suddenly you meet them as friends. Doesn't mean that they are not radical. Doesn't mean that they're coming around to your point of view, but they are still friends. Rahel was an attractive girl in our school, a first class, 10th grade. She got into a special course, nurse's training. She got through it with distinction, and she is now at Tembidolo in that very tough situation as the hospital nurse. Aster was also a 10th grader in our school. She went away for special work. She was helped to come to the States. She went back, and she is now married to a very fine Christian young man. Their home is down in the area near the university, where there have been lots of assassinations. And it's sort of like walking into a little oasis when you go in there. Aster is teaching at the National School of Music. And she and her husband are active in the church. German was in our first class, went right on through, graduated, qualified for university, was brought over to the United States, went to our United Presbyterian College in Sterling, Kansas, went on to Wichita, got his master's degree, came back as a teacher at the school where he started. And German is probably, for teaching English to Ethiopians, probably the best English teacher that we have ever had in the school. And we have had good ones. It was Adamasu who provided for me one of the most interesting experiences that I ever had in connection with chapel. It was one of those days when there was some tension and students were ready with their questions. There had been a lot of talk about American imperialism and so on, and it was getting so that they were throwing expressions like that around rather indiscriminately. It felt when we went into chapel as if this was going to be a hard day. Students were all primed. They wanted to ask a lot of questions, and Otto Adamasu was then acting director. Dr. Solomon was gone. Otto Adamasu was in the first class that we had in the secondary school. So we were with him until he graduated. He too qualified for university, came over here, had his undergraduate work in Sterling College in Kansas, and we recently attended his marriage. But the thing that I won't forget is my feeling as I watched him handle the questions that were being thrown out by students. There had been lots of trouble under the surface. We had a good school year, but there were people planted in the student body, one person in particular that we were sure was responsible for reporting back to the central organization. The students were a little bit keyed up, asking questions, and Otto Adamasu was answering. And he did what, of course, no foreigner could do. He picked up these remarks about American imperialism and so on, and began to take students to task and suggest that they ought to be more careful, that they know their facts, that they know what they're saying before they say it. Not many people can pull something like that off. But it seemed that as time went on, he had a rapport with the students that was very remarkable, and the tension just gradually seemed to drain out of the room, until by the end of the chapel period, we were able to walk out of there, students and staff alike, feeling relaxed and at ease, ready for the day's work. The thing that I thought about as I sat there was about the investment that we had in Aramaso. And what a privilege it is to have been able to invest in a person like that. Now, he's not alone. There are many of them. And I hope that when it may seem that our work in Ethiopia has gone down the drain, has been something of a waste, that you will remember that because you reached out overseas, there are people like Otto Mosisa, Aramasu, German, Aster, Rahel. Now, those are only a few. And beyond Dembidolo, there are people that you don't know. Emmanuel Abraham, a minister in the government, is also a leader in the evangelical church. General Taye, first a Christian, is also head of the Ethiopian Air Force, also member of the board in charge of Hope Enterprises in Addis Ababa. Captain Johannes is an EAL pilot for international flights, an active and dedicated Christian who told us recently, told my sister-in-law, that things will probably get worse, but in a few years, Ethiopia and America will be friends again. So when we're tempted to question whether it's all worth the effort, let's remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to a young church. He urged them to be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. This, I think, we will have to take by faith. Most of you can't see what your work does over there. My privilege has been, as sort of an extension of your arm, perhaps, to be over there and to see these things. And for that, I am very grateful.